afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. A Democrat candidate says she's the victim of an email scam. But is she actually a victim of an email scam? That's what's trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
I instantly became suspicious of a story from King 5. Because they've been really pushing hard a story that came out over the weekend, but then was at the front page of their website today, which is odd. Just on the surface, that was like, well, isn't that from the weekend? What are you doing? Why is this your lead? I mean, I'm guessing she's a Democrat, and you probably want her, right? And that's precisely what she is. She's a Democrat. Her name is Marie Shimada. She's running to be the Island County Commissioner, which, you know, is definitely a high-profile job that would normally get King Five's, you know, interest. And I may just be picking up on suspicions because it's just not a well-done story, and just it's odd that they're highlighting it. That might totally be it. I have no idea. But there was just something internally that as I was reading this story, something felt weird. Now, the basic premise is that someone sent out four separate emails. We don't know how many people read the emails. We have no idea. They don't even try to speculate. They just say four emails were sent out. According to King 5, they were, quote, twisting what she, the candidate, had posted about Women's History Month into something that was offensive, making it seem like she does not like white people or senior citizens. That's it. That's all we get. That's all we get. Now, I don't know how that is a quote-unquote scam. I guess I use the term scam differently. I suppose it technically... Does that even technically count as a scam?
Maybe more like slander. Or maybe
it was a criticism, a satire. I honestly don't know. They do not provide any additional details except that sentence. That's it. And we have searched online. You've searched. We have not been able to find the email or emails. And again, I'm not saying emails weren't sent. I'm sure they were. But I am questioning whether or not they're being categorized correctly when you say scam. I just have that basic question. Now, Shimada spoke with King 5, obviously taking advantage of this for free publicity for her campaign.
I think that Island County, and especially like this community, is a really beautiful place. And I think there's a lot of people with a lot of good intent.
Well, just real quickly, you all do have Greg Banks as your county prosecutor, right? He's the dude who I remember writing about years and years and years ago about how he was posting online how racist every single Trump supporter was. And then after getting caught and apologizing, he did it over and 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 over again. I remember that. So, you know, spare me the whole, they're so nice. You mean they're very liberal on Island County. That part's true.
So it surprised me, of course, that there would be a bad actor who would be sending something both fraudulent, or malicious.
Well, is it fraudulent or malicious? Is it both? Is it a scam? Who said scam? Where'd that word come from, King 5? Now, I ended up Googling this to see if I can find it anywhere. I did end up finding a story from the South Whidbey Reporter, or the Record, South Whidbey Record. And I suppose it gives you some more context. It also doesn't tell us what's actually in the email. There's no quotes from the email. They just kind of talk around it. They say the emails were distributed after she posted a message to supporters pointing out that she, if elected, would be the first person of color to serve on the Board of Commissioners. She describes herself as a, quote, mixed race individual who is both Hispanic and Asian American. Now, in her letter that she posted, she wrote, "Why is this issue important? Because research suggests that children of color experience mental flexibility leading to more creative problem-solving skills in life, priming them for leadership opportunities and better relations with others." That better be the fake email. You're arguing that, quote-unquote, children of color are more mentally flexible than anyone else? Really? Okay. I'll guess we'll pretend that that's probably true. That's your argument? Vote for me. I'm biracial. It's quite a slogan. Yeah.
Could work up there, though.
It probably does work over there. That's the funny thing and the sad thing. So apparently, I guess that email was actually the fake email probably did what I just did, which is criticize as a joke. Now, it sounds like the person who sent out the email sent it from a name that was hers, Marie Shimada. And I'm willing to bet that it's very clearly satirical. Criticizing someone who says something like she just said, because that's absurd. I mean, that's really, truly silly. Now, she said the emails espoused everything she was truly opposed to. And how dare you insinuate I don't like white people?
It's exactly what I'm against. It gives me another opportunity to remind everyone that I'm about inclusivity, about helping this community, advancing everyone's priorities.
I love everyone and everything. I am a hero. Of course I don't hate white people. I count on their guilt so that I can actually get their votes. Hello, this is Island County. Where do you think you are? I would never say anything bad about white people. I mean, if they're MAGA supporters, obviously I'm going to say something horrible about them. I would never say that about everybody else. I love everyone. I'm hashtag inclusive. Look at my avatar on Instagram. It's got a little ribbon. And it says, hashtag I'm a hero. Please vote for me. That wasn't a scam comment. That I was joking. I was making a joke. I was mocking you.
Just to set the record straight.
Yeah, because the King 5. Talk show hosts quotes scam statement that wasn't actually said or done by candidate. And then this article from King 5 and the story that they did, it gets into immediately like fake politics. It goes to someone who's, I guess, an expert in misinformation or disinformation. And I think it made reference to the Biden robocalls, even though they could have very easily found examples on both sides that were, quote unquote, scammy to them. They spoke to Jevin West. He's the co-founder of the Center for an Informed Public at UW. And you know where I go to become informed as a member of the public? University of Washington. Definitely. I do first make sure that I'm talking to a professor who hates Jews. And they said, it's pretty much all of them. Don't worry. You'll be hard pressed to find someone who does support Jews. So don't worry. You'll be fine. And he said, this technology is, I guess, going to take down democracy or something.
The most important thing people can do right now is just be aware of this new technology for text, video, audio, images, and let everyone they know about it.
Okay. I, for one, think the interview on King 5 by Marie Shimada was AI. It was AI generated. Because all I can think about now is, you know, the possibilities.
When I was listening to that UDev guy, I was just thinking, like, that's the most useless piece of advice ever.
They always use useless sound clips. It's almost like they get the good stuff and they edit it out. And they only leave in the completely useless commentary. This is, hey, I need to have another voice in my package. Let me just get a throwaway, quote unquote, expert. Because now it sounds like I'm coming from a place of authority. You're not. Something feels off. I went to her website. She's fundraising off of this. Just saying. Just give us the email. And I reached out to, I think it was Eric Wilkinson, who did it from King 5. I sent him a tweet saying, can you show us the emails or something? You can put at the top, this is a fake email. I'm only putting it out there so people understand the context of my reporting. That's okay. You can put a watermark on it. I don't care about that. Just, I want to look, because I've been burned by these stories in the past. I remember, I think it was also King 5. It was out of, I want to say, it might have been Carnation, where there was a white supremacist symbol that was tagged on the side of a fence. And then I looked it up because no one would post it. And like, you don't even explain what it is. You just say a white supremacist symbol. And it was a don't tread on me image. That's it. That's all it was. It was the Gadsden flag. That's it. That is not a white supremacist symbol. That is not. You could argue, I suppose, some people who are white supremacists have used it, I guess. Oh, okay. Some white supremacists like the Beatles. It's not a white supremacist banned. Okay? I'm just saying, Let It Be is not like some white supremacist theme song. Let your hate be. No, it's just, I don't understand.
That's subliminal messaging.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let It Be. They're talking about white supremacy culture. Just let it be. That's the Beatles, right?
Yep, okay, it is.
Good. That was the first song that came to mind. Oh, and then Eleanor Rigby. You know who she was? A Nazi? Yeah.
They never really specify. Yeah, she might have been.
They didn't say she wasn't. I didn't hear her say her pronouns. I shouldn't even say she, her. Oh, God. Push the button.
What's trending? Supreme Court.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court is allowing Idaho to enforce its ban on gender-affirming care, quote-unquote, for youth that some people are claiming are transgender. They have a law that is being allowed to move forward as it goes through the court system. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that if it makes its way to the Supreme Court that they will side with it. It does mean, generally speaking, that they believe from a legal perspective, if the courts are doing what they're supposed to do, they will allow it to move forward on its own. And they don't want to get involved unnecessarily, even though this does kind of get involved unnecessarily. Now, the order states that this 2023 law that would subject physicians to up to 10 years in jail if they give hormones or puberty blockers or other so-called gender-affirming care medications to people under the age of 18, you can move forward with it despite the fact that there was a court order from two trans teens who had sued to challenge the law because they wanted to be able to still obtain health care. They said, okay, we're going to pause it for now. But then the Supreme Court said no. Now, the three liberal justices would have kept the law on hold. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote that it would have been better to let the case proceed, quote unquote, unfettered by our intervention. But Judge Neil Gorsuch, or Justice Neil Gorsuch, said, quote, it is a welcome development that the court is reining in an overly broad lower court order. And that could really be what it's about. It's just the way that the ruling initially came out. I wouldn't read too much into it. Although my guess is if it did get to the Supreme Court, because they're conservative, they would at least, it might not be 6-3. It might be a 5-4 decision with John Roberts or frankly, Brett Kavanaugh, who I think is, he's clearly conservative, but he's also a pretty, you know, honest guy when it comes to the law. And he's sided with some of the liberal justices in the past on cases that haven't been all that controversial, but you know, it shows that he's a little bit flexible as far as not just being a hyper-partisan. And that's actually what you do want in a Supreme Court justice. I find this to be fascinating because we have gone from 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds. And now we're pretending that a toddler can be trans. And we're now supposed to believe that that 2-year-old is actually stuck in the wrong body. And he, she, or they know at 2 years old. No. They don't. They have no concept of gender. And all you're doing is confusing kids about gender. I don't think it's done with the best of intent all the time, but usually I'm assuming it's because people are true believers that you are born in the wrong body and you get to choose whatever gender you want to be, and they're just trying to make it easier for that person. The problem is they are assuming that these kids are transgender instead of just assuming that they're going through a normal part of life, of growing up, of figuring out who they are. I'm willing to bet that a bunch of kids who are just gay ends up getting labeled transgender, pushed in that direction, which is ironic because you're playing into gender roles, right? Oh, you know, you're a girl who's playing with trucks. Well, that must mean you're a boy, or it's a girl who likes playing with trucks. Weren't you guys the ones who said we have to get rid of just pushing girls into quote unquote girl toys and boys into quote unquote boy toys?
They also say that you're born this way and you can't choose your sexual preference, but then you can choose your gender.
Yeah, like, you can choose your gender. And see, gender and sexual orientation are different. One's a social construct and the other is also a social. Well, everything's a social. Never mind. It's just social construct. I love those arguments. What is not a social construct? Name something that is not a social construct.
Yeah, I know. It's
everything is a social construct. Yeah,
we have societies have norms.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense what they're saying. And they say it anyway. And they don't care. They don't care that they're confusing these kids. And then, of course, the people who think that a 13-year-old can run away from home to get surgical intervention and be protected under the law in Washington state from telling the parents where that kid is and getting that surgical intervention without parental consent, that's not extreme. They're the ones calling us extreme. Make that make sense. Marco Elias, state senator, Democrat. I looked at one of his tweets going at, he's calling Dave Reichert a MAGA Republican, which is just, oh my God, you guys are so pathetic. You're just so pathetic. A MAGA Republican, we got to get rid of this extremism. Dude, you're the one who passed the bill allowing a 13-year-old to run away from home and get gender-affirming care, quote-unquote, including surgery, without parental consent while the state is prohibited from telling the parent where the kid is. And Dave Reichert's the extremist? Really? Okay.
Anybody to the right of Barack Obama is a MAGA Republican.
Oh my God. I don't even know. It's probably further than that. It's probably to the right now of Bernie Sanders.
Trotsky?
Yes, it's Trotsky. If you're on the right of Trotsky, if you're like, what's in between Trotsky? Who's one step down?
Step down from Trotsky?
Yeah, closer to the center, and not even close to the center.
Probably Bernie.
Probably. That's it. Or AOC. Yeah, that's probably true. Oh my God. Probably Bernie Sanders isn't progressive enough. In fact, I've seen some of the, he's trying to play both sides on Israel. Maybe the inner Jew in him is saying, please don't sell out your people for, you know what, you're going to sell an extra couple books and you'll get more votes. You're not running again. You're 113 years old. Go away already. And so he's kind of been playing it both ways and he ends up getting attacked for it, which is kind of funny. Oh my God. So this is good news out of Idaho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So you've been hearing the news at the top of the hour where you've got a number of jurors now seated. I think the total at this point is 7. They're still going through the whole process. It's going to still take some time. We're not going to really have anything settled until next week. But there is concern that someone who shouldn't be on the jury is going to get on the jury. And I've seen this concern be made on both sides, right? Conservatives who are worried that someone's going to lie and get on the jury only to go after Donald Trump. And then some Democrats are saying the opposite. And they made it a little bit easy on the right because of a tweet that Clay Travis put out, which is not jury tampering, which is the stupidest thing that Eric Swalwell, I think, has ever said, other than, oh, hey, would you like to meet up to a Chinese spy? This is the tweet that Clay Travis put out. If you're a Trump supporter in New York City who is part of the jury pool, do everything you can to get seated on the jury and then refuse to convict as a matter of principle, dooming the case via hung jury. It's the most patriotic thing you could possibly do. So is that a little unethical to tweet out? Yes, it is. You should always be honest. You should never lie. However, I'm not going to pretend that that's probably the exact thing they're doing on the left. I guarantee you. And if this was sent out by someone on the left first, they would be celebrating this. Okay? Do I like it? No, I don't. I really don't. Would I be mad if it happened? No, because I think this entire process has been an utter sham. And that's not how the criminal justice system is supposed to work. It's not a criminal justice system if you get to decide what the outcome's going to be based on your politics. And that's precisely what it is they're trying to do here. And he's already in New York City, which is nearly impossible to get a fair jury. Nearly impossible. The funny thing is, there will be more people who forget Clay Travis wrote this tweet in 5 minutes than will be conservative in New York and gets a summons to be on a jury. You will forget right now. There are more people who forgot the person I'm just talking about. They will forget the president's name. There will be more people who forget the president's name right now. And I'm going to say it, Donald Trump. They forget his name, then you'll get conservatives on that jury.
I think the president will forget his name.
Well, I mean, Joe Biden is, of course, going to forget his own name. Now, Sonny Hostin, TV's dumbest lawyer, reacted.
The legal teams will be checking the jurors' social media profiles to see if they can assess the truthfulness and intention of what they said during voir dire, which is their questioning. And I think that's really, really important, because if you start liking Trump's and you follow Trump stuff on social media, can you be impartial? I don't really think so. And I think what could...
I follow Joe Biden. I don't understand the whole, well, if you follow Joe, it must mean you're a big... No. I hate myself, and that's why I follow Joe Biden.
What could happen in a case like this is if you have someone, and we were talking about this morning, someone named Clay Travis is sort of telling people to get onto that jury. You get one person that sneaks onto that jury with untoward feelings, that person can hang that jury.
Then she goes on, by the way, to just say Donald Trump is guilty, guilty, guilty. He's a horrible person, blah, blah. She's doing precisely what it is that Clay Travis is doing, which is try to influence the potential jurors. That she's doing exactly the same thing. Now, we did hear from one of the dismissed jurors. I don't know why this is interesting or important at all. They let a whole bunch of people go. Okay. She spoke to MSNBC. Her name is Kara McGee.
It was odd. It was such an interesting experience because I had never seen him in person before, you know, and you see someone blown up so larger than life on the media for so many years. To see them in person is very jarring. And you get the sense that it's like, oh, this is just another guy. And also he sees me talking about him, which is bizarre.
I mean, it's not that bizarre. Okay. I guess she didn't look. Remember Emily Kors? I had to Google her name. I can't remember. She's the weirdo. From the grand jury, she was the foreman.
Oh, right. And she had like the crazy eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. She had like crazy eyes. She talked like if she wrote a letter to you, it would be cut out magazine letters and then pasted onto a sheet of paper. That's basically what you would get from her.
She probably has like 10 cats, too.
Oh, at least that are dead. We didn't even get into the cats that she has that are alive. She's surrounded by and they're all stuffed. Stuffed cat. And they're all named Mittens. It's really odd. It's like Mittens 1, Mittens 2. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-877. Don't forget, our local tax expert and advocate Greg Nunn wants you to know the IRS is going after those old cases very aggressively, as aggressively as the newer cases. So if you owe money or owed money, please be proactive. Call Greg Nunn right now at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. When we come back, a big look.
Sammamish, Kent, Olympia, Everett.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Centralia, Lakewood.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start with a considerable and, frankly, alarming update out of the city of Renton. We told you yesterday about the 16-year-old boy who was accused of shooting his 15-year-old friend, killing him. Now, he ended up getting held on $1 million bond. That indicates something not great. Because we speculated, based on the details of him calling 911 to report it, that this sounds like it was an accident. Usually, if you have, you know, purposefully shoot someone, certainly not that I'm saying that that's even alleged here at this point, it's not, but that makes sense that you call if it was an accident. If you did it on purpose intentionally, you probably wouldn't call 911. That's just my guess. I don't know what happened here, obviously, but the $1 million bail indicates that something else is afoot, and as it turns out, something else was on his foot, or at least his ankle, an electronic home monitoring bracelet. Yeah.
I like what you did there.
Isn't that good? He had an electronic home monitoring bracelet on. Why might someone get that? Because they got in front of a judge and convinced said judge, based upon the facts of a previous case, that you've been accused to not go to juvenile detention and instead promise to behave and, you know, not shoot people. And it turns out in that case, it was a drive-by shooting that he was accused of being involved in. Now, that's when you go into a car and you fire a weapon from car, usually at a target. And sometimes you hit the target, but oftentimes you also hit a bunch of other people. It's not a good thing to do and makes you incredibly dangerous and makes it so that you should be in jail. Now, what happened in this case, or that original case, was they end up arresting him. He gets put in jail for 3 days. They did not file charges at that point. They were still working on the investigation. And it's at that point that by the rules, you have to be released from jail. Turns out, just a few days after that, they finally did end up pressing the charge, or like filing the charges against this kid. And he came back to the court hearing. And essentially what his lawyer said was, hey, he doesn't really need to go into jail, into juvenile detention. I mean, he's here right now. It shows that he is a responsible person. And the judge decided to say, oh, yeah, that's a very valid argument. Yeah, he did show up today. That's a good point. Thank you. Thank you, counselor. I'm still trying to find out who that judge is. I don't know who it is yet. But at that point, the judge said, okay, we'll do electronic home monitoring. Now, obviously, this time around, in this case, Prosecutor Logan Bryant was crystal clear about the stakes.
In this case, he gained access to a firearm, specifically, as law enforcement noted, a ghost gun that would be untraceable, and shot and killed the victim, who was 15 years old. One of the conditions was no contact with the victim in this case. And if he complied with that condition, we would not be here today.
So a couple things. If the judge didn't release him, you guys wouldn't be here today, and that 15-year-old kid probably wouldn't be dead. Number two, did you hear that little aside at the end there, kind of important detail? Not to have contact with the victim. That's kind of a big deal, which now makes me question the whole, I didn't know. This is irresponsible gun ownership. Well, you can't own a gun. You're 16 years old. Well, you know what I mean. Right? The something, yeah. Now, the judge, Veronica Galvan, what's my rule about judges? If I know someone's name, is that good or bad?
Probably bad.
It's never good. It's never been good. It's never been good. They had her this time, and it was so obvious what needed to be done. Even this judge couldn't say, okay, I'm going to release you.
Unfortunately, in this instance, community safety was not achieved. In that we have a youth who failed to comply with the court's conditions on EHN.
Yeah. I'm looking at a story from 2019 titled Judge Veronica Galvan Endangers Us with Social Justice Rulings. So the fact that even she had to put this kid in juvenile detention, that tells you something. Yeah. We don't put juveniles where they belong upon learning that they are the key suspects on violent crime. Just saying. It's rather remarkable, isn't it, that you can get accused of a drive-by shooting and be released on electronic home monitoring. Rather curious, because I've covered a lot of these stories, and I remember one particular kid who ended up getting released despite being charged associated with a drive-by shooting, who then allegedly went on to commit an armed robbery in which he allegedly at the time, I don't know if the trial has even happened yet, it's been a while, shot a bunch of people, including one who had to have her liver removed as a result. So also kind of a mistake, I guess, that the judge made. But, you know, social justice. How many times do you have to get caught with a gun in order to be charged? Any guesses?
Once.
No, you see, that would make sense.
Twice?
No, that would make a little less sense, but still make more sense.
Three times?
No, keep going.
Five?
Five times. Yeah. Crazy, huh? Kind of feels like if I was caught with a gun and I just didn't have my concealed carry permit on me, I'd go to jail for life. I feel like they'd really throw the book at me.
You vote Republican, so that's why, probably.
That was kind of my point.
Yeah.
You didn't have to introduce that. That was the joke.
Oh, okay.
Now it didn't seem like a very good one. Now you've undermined my comedy. He doesn't know how to react now because he's still new. I'm kidding. Relax, my God. So, yeah, not good. Let's stay in Renton for a second because their police department just made the announcement that they're moving forward with what the council approved, which is a huge hiring bonus. It used to be $20,000 to get a lateral officer, meaning an officer who is currently in policing, has all the training, certification, is actively out there on duty for a different agency and says, hey, I don't want to work in Seattle anymore, or I don't want to work on the King County Sheriff's Department anymore, but I want to stay in King County. Well, Renton's all like, okay, not only are we going to give you $20,000 as a recruitment bonus, we're going to give you a $20,000 bump on top of that, $40,000. They're giving lateral officers. Megan Black is the comms director with Renton PD. She spoke with Cairo 7 TV to say, look, we're not in a catastrophic, quote unquote, staffing situation, but you know, we could use a few more.
So all of us have been struggling to fill vacancies within law enforcement, and the Renton Police Department has been fortunate to, yes, we are down, but we're not catastrophically down. So we have 5 vacancies. That doesn't take into account the number that are at the academy or waiting to go to the academy or still on FTO. So it's not always the number of vacancies that accurately reflects the number who are actively working.
Now, for those of you wondering how they're going to pay for this, it's actually quite smart. They budgeted for those empty positions. They haven't been filled, so it comes with cost savings, obviously, or budget that hasn't been spent. And so they're saying, hey, let's spend it, but let's spend it here. We want to hire these people for whatever reason. I'm going to pretend that the BLM movement didn't happen and scare a whole bunch of people away from becoming cops. No one wants to get this job, or too few people want it. So let's up the incentive. I would feel awful if I was the cop who last applied and got the job, only to then find out. Like, I feel like if you've done it within a certain months of being hired, you should be eligible, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just going to create resentment otherwise.
Just quit and get hired again.
Right, you could just quit and then become... Well, no, you wouldn't be a lateral. You can't lateral from your own position.
That's true.
I'm going to quit. Hey, SPD, you're desperate. You'll hire me tomorrow, right? Yeah, please. Get the job. It's like, psych, I'm going to go back and get my 40 grand. Megan Black says their officers are working overtime right now as a result of the staffing situation, just to make sure everyone is safe, because you're obviously in Renton dealing with a surge of violence.
If you look in the last 3 weeks, we have had 4 incidents, major incidents with juveniles involved, 15 different suspects. All but 2 are in custody right now. Our officers are working overtime to get this done.
Now, I know this is going to sound a little weird, and this is me saying it, not her. There are a lot of officers who want to work in larger cities because, for lack of a better term, that's where the action is, where you actually get to be a cop, that you're busy, you're dealing with it. And it's a weird kind of internal feeling, right? It's like a radio host who goes on and there's just nothing in the news, and so you're struggling for 4 hours. Versus, well, I don't want there to be a major news story, but if there was, like, God forbid, a mass shooting or something, okay, at least I have something to talk. You know what? It's just like a weird internal feeling that you can't quite wrap your head around, but you do, the honest ones at least acknowledge it.
It's kind of like what Chaz did for your career.
It's 100%. It's Chaz. Chaz helped me, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. Give me 1 second because I'm about to yell and I have to do some vocal exercises. So talk for 2 seconds.
I'm talking for to cover for Jason here for a second.
Okay. So there's a story from Cairo 7 that makes me want to strangle everyone. Remember when I did that whole thing about the Wazoo named the Apple?
Yes.
It's a very good bit. And I made an article out of it that went wild. Everyone is talking about it. Because it was so mean, but it came off almost like I was being knowingly mean, so it wasn't actually mean, but I did the knowingly on purpose. I did knowingly covering it so that I wouldn't come off as mean, but I really meant everything I said. Help name Pierce County's litter vacuum truck. It's a litter vacuum truck that Pierce County wants you to name. Let's call it not getting credit for doing your job. Let's call it that. Is it wordy? Yes. I'm not naming a truck that picks up trash. You know what it is? It's a trash vacuum truck. What does it need a name for? Vacuum McVacuum Face. What does it need a name? What are you going to do? Seriously, what is it? Let's call it the overpriced truck, because I'm sure you spent a whole bunch of money on it, only for it to do what a vacuum does. How about this? Replacement of human being who could have also cleaned. How about that? Is that not...
They're not very pithy. That's...
How about... Let's just call it this. A vacuum truck!
That works.
What does it need a special name for? Let's just say you call it Joe. Okay? You think we're going to have conversations about Joe after this? Because it's going to be really confusing. Because you're going to say, oh, unfortunately, Joe is in the shop. Can't pick up any more trash. Like, what in the shop? What happened to him? You mean the doctor's office? No, he's a truck. Well, then why'd you call him Joe? Why? I don't know why I get so angry at this, other than I think it brings smiles to people's faces. And it's so lame to be thinking it's all cutesy, right? It's just, it's lame. The Apple one is better than this.
Oh, for sure.
And the Apple one sucks. Although I will say, they ask you to name an apple that you don't even know what it tastes like and will never know until after it's named. But this, at least you know what it does. It's a vacuum. Wow. I'm so impressed.
Name it like Hoover or something.
That's already a name! I got one, actually. Dyson.
Not bad.
Right? I think that could be a worldwide brand. It can be a global brand. And you know what we can do? We can come up with this newer technology that's not even all that new, but we'll call it new, and then we'll overcharge by like $700 for everything, including I like the idea of coming up with an ionic blow dryer that I'll always say the next time I travel, I'm going to bring it with me, because the hotels never have good ones. And then I always say it's too clunky for me to bring it with me. And then I leave it. That's what's going to happen.
That really? But
yeah. And then someone's going to turn to me and say, why'd you just spend $640 on a blow dryer? To which I'll then have to say, well, my hair is amazing, isn't it? And they'll say, okay, I concede that. Yeah, that's the...
How did we get from a trash truck to blow dryers?
Well, it inspired it. It does. It's the opposite of sucking. It's blowing out the air. It blows up garbage from the...
That's true.
That would be a bad one. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you choose the story we discuss. Story number one, there's a shortage of a very specific type of beer, specific brand here in Seattle. Or story number two, NPR suspends the veteran editor who blew the whistle on the liberal bias at the organization. Now, one story I know nothing about. The other one I know a lot about. So choose wisely. 1-800-465-8770 for your text.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do. And you guys must really like me. Thank you. You went with the NPR story. They suspended Uri Berliner after he went after NPR and called out the absence of viewpoint diversity. It was published in the Free Press. It got a whole lot of coverage. And it was gutsy, very gutsy of him, because he's working there and he's calling them out. And generally, you don't do that. Generally, that's not a good look. However, I think he was being celebrated, not just because he was taking down NPR, because we would normally do that. I think he was being celebrated because he actually did this with good intentions. It came off as him wanting to genuinely help NPR be better. And you don't always do that. When I criticize NPR, it's not because I want them to be better. It's because I don't want them to get any funding, right? And I'm open about that. I think NPR is awful. Let them work in the marketplace just like everybody else. They don't have to do that. But when he did it, he wasn't looking to get fired. At least it didn't come off that way. NPR media reporter David Folkenflik reported the 5-day suspension without pay. It started this past Friday. Now, with my defense of why he did it, if I'm going to be totally, totally, totally honest and fair, he 100% should have been suspended. 100%. He was 100% correct. He was respectful. I think he acted in good faith. However, you do have rules. You do have rules. And all of us have to abide by that for the most part. Offering some gentle criticism is one thing. Doing what he did all in, as well-intentioned as it was. Of course, it was against policy, and there have to be consequences. He has not been fired. That is good. Had he been fired, this would have been horrible optics. Right now, it's bad optics if you're conservative, but what do they care? Right? I mean, there's already bad optics from conservatives. But I think some people can actually understand why this is. And by the way, I think Berliner probably understands the suspension. He was willing to accept the consequences, of which he had to assume there would be some. Obviously, the worst case would have been termination. Best case, nothing would have happened, but we kind of expected something to happen. If I went out, even in good faith, and criticized KTTH or our parent company the way that he did NPR, even if I was 100% correct, yeah, I should at least be suspended. I should, according to the policies. And if I wasn't, well, then what's the point of having the policy? And how do you evenly execute your, you know, employee handbook if you're not going to take on a very obvious case? Now, the media reporter wrote of the essay, "It angered many of his colleagues, led the NPR leaders to announce monthly internal reviews of the network's coverage, and gave fresh ammunition to conservative and partisan Republican critics of NPR, including former President Donald Trump." I like how he sort of glossed over that second point, which is exactly what they should be doing, which is audit their coverage to ensure that they're at least being nonpartisan and objective the way that they say they are supposed to be in order to get the funding from the United States government, from taxpayers. Like, that's a positive. That's what you want, and that's what they should have been doing. That upsets them is weird. I get that they're angered because they're getting called out for their abject bias. I get that they think this renews criticism from conservatives that never really went away. I guess it wasn't as loud, but it's not like they weren't it's not like they went years without anyone calling out NPR. We made fun of them 2 weeks ago during the, what was it? What storm that happened?
Oh, yeah.
That thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the eclipse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, right.
I did a whole big thing making fun of them. So, you know, it's not like it wasn't there. Now, the other big story connected to NPR that I find just so fascinating is that the new-ish CEO of NPR, her old tweets are being called out by a bunch of conservatives because it points to just how biased and partisan NPR actually is. And her account is just filled. Well, let's just say the tweets indicate she read Robin DiAngelo and Ibram Kendi like 400 times. And probably went to one of those dinners in which you pay the consultants $10,000 to talk about how your whiteness is ruining society. And then you're not supposed to push back. Otherwise, you're making the point that you're a racist. But if you don't push back, you're making the point that you're a racist. Yeah, that's how bad these tweets are. Like, they're really, really bad. Really bad. And that people are pretending that it's totally cool for her to complain about white privilege and defend property damage, which is called vandalism, that that's totally okay and appropriate for the NPR CEO and doesn't send a message about how from the top on down, they're crazy to the left. Oh, okay. Haha, funny. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to weigh in. I'd love to know, do you agree with me or disagree with me on the suspension part? I agree with everything he said, but I also agree he should have been suspended. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You are listening to The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH.